Okay, now I can start. Sorry about that. Damn computers. All right, so at this point we've done the scapula, the humerus, the radius, the ulna, the glenohumeral joint, the scapulothoracic articulation, right, and the elbow joint. So we're going to come back up again. So we've done some bones and some joints. We have to talk about muscles that affect the joints. So these are the muscles of the brachium. Of course, the brachium is the anatomical term for the upper arm, which runs between the shoulder and the elbow. So the first one is called biceps brachii. We've talked quite a bit about it. Biceps, according to meaning it has two heads to it, all right? It has a long head and a short head. The long head attaches at the supraglenoid tubercle, the scapula. So remember, that's the bump that we find superior to the glenoid fossa in the scapula. And the short head is from the apex or the tip of the coracoid process of the scapula. Distally, they come together as they travel down the arm and to share the same attachment distally. So that is the radial tuberosity, but also something called the bicipital aponeurosis, which goes into the deep fascia overlying the common flexor belly and tendons. So this is a muscle, but these are muscles that we'll be talking about eventually, but we can see that the biceps comes down distally into that radial tuberosity, but it has this thin aponeurosis that comes across and helps cover over top of those flexors in the forearm itself. So you have this broad sheet that comes out and covers and overlies what's called the common flexor belly tendon. So we've got pronator teres here, but deep to this are the flexors. So when we relate to the forearm in the anatomical position, the anterior muscles in the forearm are flexors, and the posterior muscles in the forearm are extensors. So it lies over top of those muscles that flex at the wrist, okay? So we can see it here again into that that radial tuberosity and then this bicipital aponeurosis, and you can see how it kind of covers over the common flexor group here amongst other muscles as well. So it does provide you kind of a fascial sort of connection that overlies other muscles distally. So because it crosses the elbow joint anteriorly, it flexes the forearm at the elbow joint. Now, when the forearm is pronated, that radial tuberosity actually lies deep between the radius and ulna. So when we're in the anatomical position, that tuberosity in the radius does sort of sit out a little bit. But in pronation, because the radius rolls over, that radial tuberosity gets underneath and deep. Everybody follow me? Right? So anatomically, it's kind of exposed there. In pronation, it kind of rolls underneath. So because of that, the fibers end up wrapping around the medial side of the proximal radius. So in pronation, biceps comes down and wraps underneath to that radial tuberosity in pronation. Yeah? Everybody can kind of see that in your mind? So because it does that and rolls underneath, the biceps pulls on the radial tuberosity, which results in the radial head laterally rotating, and the distal radius will move around the ulna, resulting in supination at the radial ulnar joint. So in that pronated position, because that biceps tendon wraps around to that radial tuberosity, when biceps contracts, it pulls that radial tuberosity laterally, causing lateral rotation of the proximal radius, which results in supination. Yes? Okay. Which is its primary action, not flexion at the elbow. So it is a flexor at the elbow joint, but its prime moving is supination. So it's a supinator and flexor. Biceps can supinate any length of the muscle, but it's strongest in partial flexion. So this is why when you're doing curls in the gym, you always finish with supination. That will isolate biceps and sort of take away some of the other flexors, because there really are three flexors at the elbow joint. But by doing that supination at the end of your curl, you're then focusing more on the biceps muscle as part of that. Okay? This is why also, because of biceps, how many of you here, you go to draw a bath, and to turn the water on is really difficult. You have to give it a bit of an extra, huh? You notice that? And when you turn the tap off, it's pretty easy. Nobody has baths anymore, right? Because biceps is such a powerful supinator, when you turn the tap off, you crank it in, pronation is not as strong in the human body, so you're pronating to turn the water on, so you have to give it a little extra crank because you're a little bit weaker in pronation than you are in supination. Like that old joke, right? Do you know what this is? Drawing a bath and testing the water. You know, I know you all have filthy minds, don't you? Okay. So long head biceps crosses anteriorly to the GH joint because it is a two-joint muscle. Therefore, it causes flexion at the shoulder. Yes? Okay. So it's a elbow flexor, shoulder flexor, and supinator. Okay. Because the long head also crosses over the GH joint, it causes abduction, especially if the arm is in lateral rotation. So in lateral rotation, it does do this as well. Okay. The short head is a little bit different. So we have to think that when we look at proximal biceps, we have long head that kind of travels relatively vertical in the anatomical position, but short head angles obliquely to get out to the coracoid process. So because the short head crosses the GH joint from medial to lateral below the center of the joint, which results in adduction, and if we go to 90 degrees, because the short head attaches to the coracoid process, it's completely in line with coracobrachialis, which would then result in horizontal adduction. Yes? So when we look at it, we can see here, just because of that small angle to the coracoid process, and right here is coracobrachialis. So you can see that the fibers are basically parallel to each other between coracobrachialis and short head. So the actions are relatively similar simply because they lie in a parallel relationship to each other. So 90 degrees of flexion, both coracobrachialis and short head biceps, cause horizontal adduction. Okay? Yeah, so coracobrachialis, remember, is a horizontal adductor, but so is short head a biceps. So when you think of some of the exercises you do in the gym, for example, for chest, when you do the flies, you're working pecs, coracobrachialis, and short head biceps. So it becomes a little more complicated when you start adding in all the actions of muscles, right? Those are, I'm forever going to change your workouts, because you just start to think about everything that's being used. So simply, this is actually using three different muscles. Now, who's the prime mover of horizontal abduction? Because you're also bringing anterior delts too, right? Coracobrachialis. So this is why so many people have shoulder issues when they lift weights, because they spend so much time doing anterior movements and they put so much stress on the anterior shoulder as well. Okay? So, short head crosses the GH joint from medial to lateral below the center of the joint, which results in adduction at the GH joint. So, in the normal position, it is an adductor, but at 90 degrees of abduction, it's a horizontal adductor as well, along with coracobrachialis. Innervation, musculocutaneous nerve C5, C6. Has anybody started to chart out nerve innervations to muscles at all in a chart? Have you noted that many, 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 many upper shoulder muscles have C5 as its innervator, right? And C5 is kind of a vulnerable area in the C-spine for problems. So, you know, you may see some weakness here because they've got like a bit of a stenosis or something in their C-spine that results in weakness in this area. Muscle test. So you would think, because it's a shoulder flexor, elbow flexor, supinator, that will kind of be all those, but not necessarily. I keep forgetting you have to do these. Right now I am working on your manual for your placement in semester six.
So I'm kind of focused a bit on that. Over here, biceps. Brachii. 241. It's 241. So, 241 is that there's a couple of different ways you can do it. Now, you can see that we've got A is biceps elongated and B is in the shortened position. So, we can do one of two things when we look at biceps. We can test biceps by taking out shoulder flexion, which has the patient in this position, and then resisting flexion. Or we can do it this way by having shoulder extension, elbow extension, and pronation. So it can be done either way. Make sense? Right? So this way you are pushing into extension of the shoulder, extension at the elbow, and pronation of the hand. In this way, in this position, you're resisting flexion and supination. Sorry, both. And yes, yeah. So you're doing this, okay? Are you starting to do muscle testing in labs?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. And you're spending a lot more time in this. A little bit. Okay. PNFs, of course. What would be the antagonist to biceps? Triceps. So therefore, agonist contract would be your triceps, correct. You would be contracting triceps in order to elongate biceps, or the patient would be. I still get stuck in my head because I was completely trained that I would do that. I would provide the resistance to the movement and then stretch. So the patient doesn't know. So always remember, you've got to think about that when you're looking at the PNFing, that you have to think of the antagonist to said muscle that we identify. So you can see here in the stretch, shoulder flexion, elbow fully extended, and hand pronated will stretch biceps. Any kind of movement in elbow flexion will work biceps. Isolation, of course, would be to finish in supination when you're into flexion, right? So you're starting in, you can start a couple different ways. You can start your dumbbells here, or you can start your dumbbells here, so that your supination begins immediately when you're coming into flexion. So you're doing this kind of stuff, right? Okay. Trigger points. Chief symptom is pain or aching in front of the shoulder, usually superficial and not deep. Tenderness in these areas can be mistaken for bicipital tendonitis or subdeltoid bursitis. And occasionally you can find a little bit of significant pain in the antecubital area. Okay. Brachialis, another flexor at the elbow. It rises from the distal one-third of the anterior shaft of the humerus and goes to the ulnar tuberosity and the coronoid process of the ulna. So the reason why biceps can supinate is because it attaches to the radius, which can spin, yes? Which is pronation, supination at the proximal head. Because brachialis attaches to the ulna, we can't get any other movement than flexion. Make sense? Because the ulna, remember, is significantly locked in at the trochlear notch and the trochlea of the distal humerus. So therefore, because brachialis attaches to the ulna, all we get is flexion. Okay? So, this muscle crosses the elbow joint anteriorly, resulting in flexion of the forearm at the elbow joint, which of course is the humeral ulnar joint, which is its primary. In other words, elbow flexion is its prime mover. So elbow flexion's prime mover is actually brachialis. Especially engaged in flexion when the full arm is fully pronated. So therefore, what are these called? Reverse curls. So reverse curls take biceps out and work brachialis. Now, if you want to grow pipes,
working brachialis fills in that narrowing at the distal end of the brachium, right? So it fills it in. I've tried for many years. Now, I have skinny arms. It's my genetics. There's nothing I can do about it. I've tried. God, I've tried. Okay, so that's why full pronation and reverse curls works brachialis. It would also be how you would muscle test it, correct? So full pronation and resisted extension, right, pushing down, will work brachialis and take biceps brachii out. Innervation, musculocutaneous nerve, C5, C6, C7. If we go back to biceps, we can see that it is the same nerve with a complete sharing, whereas brachialis is 7, with 6 being the prime nerve root that feeds it for strength, right? So it's bolded. The muscle test is there. We talked about it. And the stretch, of course, forearm extension in pronation, and, of course, strengthening would be reverse curls. So we can see here is the radial tuberosity for biceps, and, of course, then the ulnar tuberosity is here on the ulna. And it just makes sense, right, that because the radius can spin, therefore biceps is a pronator, is a supinator, and because brachialis attaches to the ulna, which is locked into that trochlear-notch relationship, all it does is flex. Okay, we can see it here. So biceps has been removed as well. And we can see that part of where the proximal attachment is for brachialis is very near the deltoid tuberosity. So when you're palpating the deltoid tuberosity, you're very near the more proximal part of brachialis and its attachment to the humerus. Again, the stretch would be here, just the extension of the elbow in pronation. And there's a couple of different ways that you could do this. If you're exceedingly strong, and this is a 45-pound, I couldn't do that. Can any of you guys just take your fingers and your thumb and lift up a 45-pound plate? I don't think I can. but dumbbells you can use as well, and you can do it either, you know, you can do it in here seated, or you can do it standing. Trigger point here goes to the thumb. So if you think of biceps where it went in anterior shoulder and sort of the antecubital area, brachialis actually does have some referral pain somewhat in the area, a little bit to the shoulder, but has a pretty significant intense pain in down near the thumb. So we say this trigger point produces soreness of the thumb or possible radial nerve entrapment with mild referral to the anterior shoulder and antecubital region. So sometimes this can be mistaken for carpal tunnel syndrome, but it's not enough. So, you know, if the patient, carpal tunnel, you haven't learned it yet, true carpal tunnel causes problems with thumb and first two fingers, okay? Fingers 2 and 3, really. All right, so you need all of them. And it's not here because this is ulnar nerve entrapment. So if they're only complaining of pain here, then it's not an appropriate diagnosis for carpal tunnel syndrome because it needs to be basically all three, okay? There's another couple of entrapments we're going to do in the forearm that sometimes gets confused with carpal tunnel syndrome as well. So we did brachialis. These are all the anterior muscles we did. We did brachialis. We did biceps brachii. The next one is brachioradialis, and the name kind of tells you where it sort of goes. So it arises from the proximal two-thirds of the lateral supracondylar ridge. Where's the supracondylar ridge? Remember how the diaphysis of the humerus is relatively round proximally, and then flattens out distally, and it creates these two very sharp ridges, both medially, which is the larger one, and laterally. So we say the supracondylar ridge means it's above the condyles, which of course is the trochlea and the capitulum. So it's this area right here that brachioradialis arises from. Okay? So proximal two-thirds of the lateral supracondylar ridge, and it goes to the humerus to the lateral side of the styloid process of the radius. Radium, thumb. So in the anatomical position, it arises from the lateral supracondylar ridge and goes to the lateral styloid process on the radius, right? The radial styloid process. So it stays out here on the lateral aspect in the anatomical position. Yes? Makes sense. Okay? So, this muscle crosses the elbow anteriorly, which does result in flexion of the forearm at the elbow. So it is a forearm flexor as well. That means that functionally, we're pretty strong in flexion. We have biceps brachii that flexes at the elbow. We have brachialis that flexes at the elbow. And we have now brachioradialis that flexes at the elbow as a prime movement. It is a much more effective elbow flexor when the forearm is in what's called the neutral position. So this is supination in the anatomical position. This is pronation, which is not the anatomical position, but the palms are faced backwards. But when we're between supination and pronation, which is my thumbs face forward, and if I flex my elbows with my thumbs facing to the ceiling, this is when brachioradialis is at its strongest. Right? And these are called hammer curls. Okay? So that's where it's strongest. This muscle, though, can both pronate and supinate the forearm at the radial ulnar joints. Huh? If I'm in pronation, it will supinate me to halfway. If I'm in supination, it will pronate me to halfway. I'll repeat. When I'm pronated, it will supinate me to here. And when I'm supinated, it will pronate me to here. Make sense? In full supination, this muscle can pronate to halfway between pronate supinate, which is, of course, the halfway between, and due to the attachment of the styloid process and lateral supracondylar ridge. If fully pronated, it can supinate to the same position for the same reason. So think about it. If I go into full pronation and extension of the elbow, that will stretch it. So everybody, who's got a t-shirt on? I need a t-shirt. Come on up. Real quick. So we're just going to make it stick out. Turn and face them. Okay, you're in here. All right, so I'm going to push down. You're going to resist, okay? So you'll feel it right here. So it's on this aspect right here, yes? All right, so watch. Tell me if you can feel the stretch. I'm going to pronate you and extend. You feel the stretch in it, right? So what I've done is because it's up here on the supracondylar ridge and at the styloid process here, so that's not going to change any, but I'm going to make that radial styloid process get far away. Just simply doing that, you can see it stretched right there, yes? Okay, so therefore, if it's in this position, its contraction will take it to here only. If it's fully supinated, it will pull it to neutral here. So it's a pronator and supinator, but you need to be in those extreme ends of range, and it only ever brings it back to midway between, which we call the neutral position, which is thumbs up. That is considered the neutral position for brachioradialis. Okay, thanks. All right. It's a functional understanding, right, that it does help because we have many muscles that pronate or supinate, depending on what we're talking about. This is just will assist as a synergist, right, because its primary function is this flexion, and it is a primary supinator pronator, but only at the extreme ends to the middle, right? We do have pronator teres and supinator that work in the full range. This only works from pronation to midpoint, supination to midpoint as its primary. Okay? But again, it's the most powerful flexor when those thumbs are pointed up to the ceiling. Its reverse motor action, because it crosses the elbow to the lateral supracondylar ridge, it flexes the elbow. So if I fix my forearm, it brings my bicep closer to my forearm, right? It also supinates the ulna at the radial ulnar joint, immediately rotates the arm at the GH joint. So if I'm fixed here, if I'm pronated, and I fix the forearm, it will immediately rotate my humerus at the shoulder. But the bigger one is understanding it's a elbow flexor. So think of something that this might work where we fix the forearm, but we flex at the elbow. Give me an example. What's that? A push up a little bit eccentrically, right? Eccentrically will control. Good. Seated row. Brachioradialis will work. It's actually pulling the humerus towards it, right? Yeah, it does provide a little bit of that because this is flat, this is fixed. It's not the major. The major movement, of course, is coming from back here that's pulling on the humerus, but it will have some flexion there. Okay. I chin up as well, correct? That's why you change your hand positions, right? So this would be biceps. This would be brachialis. This would be brachioradialis. Okay? Don't have to buy weights. Just use your body. All right? Radial nerve, C5, C6. Now here, have a look. When we're looking at brachialis, musculocutaneous, C5, C6, C7. Biceps brachii, musculocutaneous, C5, C6. But brachioradialis is the radial nerve, C5, C6. Still originates from the same levels, but now it's the radial nerve, which means it's near the radius that innervates. So remember, a nerve generally tends to penetrate a muscle at its midpoint. So because if we think about the supracondylar ridge to the lateral styloid process, the midpoint of that muscle would be in the forearm, correct? So it would be the radial nerve, being that it's on the lateral or radial aspect of the forearm, right? Are you starting to hurt? Okay, that's hence the reason why it is, but it's still C5, C6. But again, take note of C5, C6, man, it innervates a lot of the arm muscles. Muscle testes and Kendall, which will obviously be resisted flexion in the neutral position. And of course, the hammer curls and the stretch that we can see here. So here we go. The supracondylar ridge is here, out here to the lateral styloid process of the radius. You can see here in the neutral position how it is a flexor of the elbow. We can see it here as well. To stretch it is literally extension with pronation, which we did with Logan. You can feel the stretch of it there because you're taking that styloid process and you're making it farther away from the supracondylar ridge. And then, of course, you've got hammer curls, whichever way you want to do them, we'll work them. Right? The nice thing is dividing between bicep curls, hammer curls, and reverse curls, you're still going to work all three to some extent, right, in any movement that you do. Trigger points here. Massage therapists get trigger points in this muscle a lot. It's just the nature of what we do. So they're common. They induce pain. It's misdiagnosed quite often as tennis elbow because you get this intense pain here in the near the lateral condyle or supracondylar ridge area. So it gets a little bit diagnosed. It's part of the superficial group and forms the lateral border of the cubital fossa. So when we think of that cubital fossa, you know, the place where they put the needle in when they take blood, it does form the lateral border of that cubital fossa. It's typical for the belly of the muscle to be prominent when working against resistance. So we can see here that we can get the sphenar web discomfort and then get that lateral sort of epicondylitis feel when there's trigger points in it. And I pretty much could probably get into all you guys or even get into your own. And don't be surprised if you find some trigger points in there, especially now that you're back to treating again, as far as that goes. Okay, let's go around to the back. So we've done the biceps group or the anterior to humerus group. Now we have to do the posterior to humerus group. So biceps brachii had a long head and a short head, right? Supraglenoid tubercle coracoid process. And it's called biceps brachii. This muscle is called triceps brachii. So therefore, how many heads must it have? It has three heads, okay? Remembering that its one attachment is the infraglenoid tubercle. So Long head biceps attached to the supraglenoid tubercle, so it attaches superiorly at the glenoid fossa, and the triceps attaches inferiorly to the glenoid fossa at the inferior glenoid tubercle. So, the long head, the longest of the three, it goes to the infraglenoid tubercle of the scapula, so right here. So we had supraglenoid here for biceps, and we had infraglenoid here for triceps, for the long head. We then have a lateral head that arises from the proximal one-third of the posterior shaft of the humerus. So one-third, we're back here. So this is back in this area here. We've had biceps in this part, triceps here. So one goes up to the supraglenoid tubercle, infraglenoid tubercle, sorry. And then we have the lateral head out here. You can kind of see a roughness here on this aspect of the humerus. You can see where it's kind of attached to. And then we have the medial head, which is two-third posterior shaft of the humerus. And all three heads come together and find attachment on the olecranon process of the ulna. Good. All right? So we can see here is our long head coming up to the infraglenoid tubercle. We have the lateral head, which we can see out here in the lateral aspect of the arm. And then we have the medial head down here on either side to some degree of the attachment site. They all share the distal attachment at the olecranon process, so we can see here. Okay. It functions because it crosses the elbow joint posteriorly. It is an extender of the forearm at the elbow joint, so it does extension. So therefore, its prime movement is elbow extension. Now, the long head crosses the shoulder joint posteriorly, which results in extension of the GH joint. So this, like biceps, is a two-joint muscle. It extends at the elbow, and it extends at the shoulder. Okay? So the long head extends at the shoulder. Because the long head crosses the shoulder medially, you get adduction. So you can see it here, how it comes across like so, coming medially, it is an adductor because of that position, right? That onto that infraglenoid tubercle from lateral to medial. Now you'll note it's not its prime responsibility, but it does assist as a synergist. When the arm is abducted to 90 degrees, it's a horizontal abductor. Again, not prime movement, but it doesn't get involved in horizontal abduction. Okay. Reverse motor action, it extends the arm at the elbow joint. Push-up. Right, so it works in a push-up by extending that arm along with pectoralis major. Okay, again, not a prime move, but it does get worked as a reverse motor action. Innervation, radial nerve, C6, C7, C8. Okay, so we've come down a little bit in segments. We don't have five here. We have 6, 7, and 8. Okay? So we're now starting to work our way down a little bit more with it. So this will make a little more sense when you guys actually next semester take neuroanatomy and you see the brachial plexus. Remember that lovely brachial plexus? I think I know who's going to teach it. And one of her quizzes is you have to draw the brachial plexus. It's complicated, but it's not. Yes? I think it might be Andrea, if I can have a say in it. She's a chiropractor and massage therapist. She does both. She became an RMT first, and then she became a chiropractor. She's a cool lady. She's a female version of me. She has ADD worse than I do. So she talks faster than I do, and she gets more animated than I do. So you'll go, oh, my God, it's a female Brian. And she's smart as a whip. She's a really intelligent lady. So okay, muscle test, you guys on lab. The stretch, of course, would be elbow flexion, shoulder flexion. So our biceps was elbow extension, shoulder extension with pronation. Triceps is flexion and flexion. So this does triceps. Yes? Quite simply. And, of course, to add to it is you just, take your opposite hand and pull that elbow up higher to the ceiling, and that will do triceps. Okay? So we can see here, working it this way. Now, you can actually work the heads a bit separately, depending on the exercises that you do in the gym. So for those who may be interested, I put this in here because the various things you can do with your triceps will work each individual head depending on what you're doing. So you can see that, you know, skull crushers and rope pull downs will do the lateral. Overhead rope extensions or one arms overhead. So these work the long head. So these work the lateral head, long head. And then bar dips, for example, push downs or close gripped bench press will work medial head. So you can isolate each of them somewhat differently in doing a triceps workout. So if you really want to challenge yourself, do all three heads in a workout. It'll be pretty trashed by the time you're done. Trigger points. They refer pain to both the inside and outside of the elbow joint, and thus can be the cause for both tennis elbow and golfer's elbow as a misdiagnosis. Trigger points in several other muscles also refer pain to the outside of the elbow, but the medial triceps trigger point is the primary cause of medial epicondylitis or golfer's elbow pain. So it can be one of the main causes of it. So it's something to consider with trigger points in here. If someone's coming to you with golfer's elbow, you do want to consider that medial head of triceps. Tricep trigger points can also refer pain to the back of the shoulder and upper arm. Good indication of the presence of tricep trigger points is the inability to reach with the arm above the head without pain. So it can cause a lot of discomfort in just reaching above the head if you have a trigger point in tricep. The next one might be a new muscle for many of you. It's a small muscle we find in the forearm. It is called anconius. It arises as well from the lateral epicondyle of the humerus. So we have to remind ourselves here anatomically. We have the supracondylar ridges, and then we have the two epicondyles. So epi meaning around, generally. So we have a large medial one here and a bit smaller lateral one here. And then, of course, the capitulum and the trochlea represent the condyles of the elbow of the distal humerus. So supracondylar ridges, medial and lateral epicondyles, and then the condyles themselves. So when we talk about the lateral epicondyle, we're getting down into here rather than up here on the ridge. Okay? So lateral epicondyle of the humerus to the lateral side of the olecranon process of the ulna. Not very long, is it? Lateral epicondyle to lateral olecranon and the proximal one quarter of the posterior ulna. Right here. So it arises from that lateral epicondyle, comes right down here onto the olecranon and part of the ulna. You can see it here kind of lying underneath here, okay? We can see it here as well. It's a very short muscle. But there's something important about it, which we'll get to in a moment. This muscle crosses the elbow joint posteriorly, resulting in extension of the forearm at the elbow joint, which is its primary action. Some suggest because where it sits, it can cause a bit of lateral deviation of the ulna. But I kind of argue that because it's pretty locked into that trochlea. I don't know how it would do that. It's a reverse motor action then. If it crosses the elbow joint, resulting in extension of the forearm, it can also extend the arm at the elbow joint as part of a reverse motor action. Radial nerves, C6, C7, C8. And muscle test, of course, is in Kendall, wrong page. There is no PNF for this particular muscle. So we can see it here as we looked at. So to stretch this, you can do this elbow extension in this position that we see here. So you're fixating all the muscle of the forearm, and you're just coming forward and stretching it that way. So you stand upright while facing a table. Flex the elbows, rest the forearms on the table with the palms up, okay? And then lean forward, bringing the chest towards the table. So the most stretched muscle would be the left anconius, that's what you're looking at in the left side here. And you do a little bit of triceps brachii in there as well, but anconius gets the majority of it. Do you feel it at all? Yeah, you feel a bit of a stretch there? Yeah. The exercise on the right is the actual, if you needed to strengthen it. Now, this is the kind of muscle that if you were to do something like this, is likely from a rehab perspective. It's not something necessarily. You might see this with, you know, individuals wanting to work their triceps kind of in this position, but it does really kind of isolate anconius a little more. Here's the thing with this muscle. Notice that it goes over top of the ulnar nerve. The ulnar nerve, where anconius is what you know of as the funny bone. So if you whack that groove in the ulnar area here, you know that little kind of groove there, and get all that tingly kind of stuff called the funny bone, anconius lies right over top of the ulnar nerve there. So if anconius is super tight and is compressing on the ulnar nerve, patient will express problems with the fourth and fifth fingers and medial aspect of the lesser thenar area of the hand, with possible weakness and or paresthesia, pins and needles, those sorts of things. But because it's the fourth and fifth fingers, it is not carpal tunnel, because carpal tunnel is these three. Okay, so that would be an ulnar nerve entrapment if you're getting issues with the fourth and fifth. And it could be from anconius, not from something down here. The interesting thing is, I'll kind of jump ahead here a little bit. The median nerve, or the radial nerve, it crosses under the palmar aponeurosis, where we have the carpal tunnel of the wrist bones lying underneath. Ulnar nerve does not go underneath that, in that carpal tunnel. It actually travels over top into the hand. So it actually is more superficial. So any kind of ulnar distribution of numbness, tingling, that kind of stuff can come from this anconius because it crosses over the ulnar nerve. Okay? The next one is pronator teres. What's that name tell you? It pronates and it is square. Teres means square. Right? It has two heads. The first is the humeral head, which arises from the medial epicondyle of the humerus and the medial supracondylar ridge of the humerus. So now we've got, most of the muscles we've been talking about have been on the lateral aspect of the humerus, correct? This is one's on the medial aspect. So it arises from the medial supracondylar ridge and the medial epicondyle. So when we look at the distal humerus here, we can see that the medial epicondyle and the supracondylar ridge are significantly larger as compared to lateral, correct? So we can see it arising from this area right here, the supracondylar ridge being here and the epicondyle being here, okay? The ulnar head arises from the medial surface of the coronoid process of the ulna. You remember where the coronoid process of the ulna is? Brian, we've had enough. We're almost done for the day. Where is my... There. Remember, this is the olecranon. And this bottom part of the... What's this? Trochlear notch. This is the coronoid process. So we're saying it goes from the medial surface of the coronoid process of the ulna. So the humeral head comes from the medial epicondyle of the humerus and the medial supracondylar ridge of the humerus, and the ulnar head goes from the medial surface of the coronoid process of the ulna, and both go all the way down to the middle one-third of the lateral radius. So we can see it here. Here is pronator teres here that's coming across. We can see that the humeral head, again, supracondylar ridge, medial supracondylar ridge, and medial epicondyle. And we can see here that the ulnar head, as we said, medial surface of the coronoid process of the coronoid process, which of course is this area here, and comes down to and wraps a little bit around the middle one-third of the lateral radius. So it goes from medial to lateral, correct. It's medial to lateral. So its function then. This muscle crosses from the medial elbow to the radial side of the forearm on the radius, therefore crossing the radial ulnar joints anteriorly. Now, because of the relationship of the radius and ulna in the forearm, and because they are so intimately connected, in other words, you have the spin of the proximal radius and the rolling over of the distal radius, we say that this muscle crosses both of them anteriorly, because you can't have one without the other. Does that make sense? Right, so if I'm going to affect anything on the radius, you're going to have movement at both the distal radial ulnar joint and the proximal radial ulnar joint at the same time. Does that make sense to everybody? Because they're so connected, you can't have one or the other. So we say that it crosses both the radial ulnar joints anteriorly. Therefore, it causes the head of the radius to medially rotate and the distal radius to cross in front of the ulna, which of course is pronation. So because it goes from here to here, it pronates. And because remember, it has to wrap around. So it wraps around to the lateral aspect of the radius. Therefore, it pulls over. Right? So like this, it will pronate. Yes? Okay? This muscle also crosses the elbow joint anteriorly. It's also a prime elbow flexor because it does cross the elbow joint as well. Right? So it affects both the distal and proximal radial ulnar joints because of its position of wrapping around to the lateral aspect of the radius, but because it also crosses the elbow joint anteriorly, it's also an elbow flexor. Okay. Innervation, median nerve, C6, C7, and the muscle tests are there. And hypersupination, elbow extension would be the stretch. So doing this will stretch pronator. Okay. Resisted pronation, of course, will strengthen it. So we can see here that supination and pronation, we can see what happens with pronator teres. We can see it crosses over here in the anatomical position of supination. And we can see what happens too when it pronates, it actually pulls the radius over in front of the ulna. Didn't realize it's so complicated, eh? Just to do that. Wait till we get to this. All right. So you can see pronation will result in the stretch. You can also do it in this position here. And just doing these pronation supinations, right, you can see them sort of, just a bit of a dumbbell on a single bar doing resisted pronation supination. You can't isolate pronator teres because you've got a couple of different muscles that are pronating or supinating, so therefore you are kind of working them at the same time when you do it. Trigger points. This is also an important muscle for the fact that you can have entrapment of the median nerve between the two heads of pronator teres muscle. I can't remember if I had a picture here or not. I thought I did. I thought I had it in there. Okay. I thought I'd found one. So we have the two heads here, and the two heads form a bit of a triangular space between the two. So as it comes down from either the supracondylar or epicondyle ridge, and then the other one coming from the coronoid process, we get this little tiny V that occurs between the two heads, okay? Because we have that V, we have the median nerve that's traveling down that's going to go to the forearm, all right? So we say the entrapment of the median nerve between the two heads of pronator teres can lead to pain and functional disability in the arm and hand and can lead to referred pain and neurological symptoms in the hand. This is known as pronator teres syndrome. It is uncommon. Usually, though, it's those who have to do in their sport a lot of really resisted pronation. Something that would have them doing this all the time. So tennis players, rowers, bodybuilders, and baseball batters, its symptoms can definitively look exactly like carpal tunnel syndrome. So someone comes to your office, they've even had surgery for carpal tunnel, and it's still there. Get your thumb and shove it in pronator teres and see, and they might go, holy crap, that's it. Right? Far too often, carpal tunnel gets diagnosed incorrectly. So you need to consider pronator teres and its relationship to the median nerve and entrapment. Okay? So that's an important muscle to know for the future. Pronator quadratus. This is the last one. No. Let's just get them done so we'll finish this. Pronator quadratus. Distal 1/4 anterior ulna to the distal 1/4 anterior radius. So this doesn't cross the forearm. Now we're down to the distal ulna and distal radius. It crosses the distal anterior forearm from the ulna to the radius, therefore pulling the distal radius anteromedially, causing that distal radius to cross in front of the distal ulna, which of course is pronation. So it's right here. So remember, ulna is fixed, right? It's stuck into that trochlea notch, trochlea, and it's the radius that moves. So you have this square muscle that attaches both to the distal ulna and the distal radius, and of course that's going to result in pronation because only the radius can move, not the ulna. So the fact that pronator teres lies in front of both the distal radius and ulna, it results in pronation. So it helps pronator teres. So when you're pronating, you actually pronator teres and pronator quadratus are both working at the same time. It is considered to be the prime mover of forearm pronation as compared to teres. Innervation is the median nerve, C7, C8. Our tests are there, and so is your resistive. We'll show the picture here in a second. So here we can see we've got, here's your epicondyle, medial epicondyle. Here is pronator teres. And then you can see down here you have pronator quadratus. And again, its sheer fact that it works on pronation is because really it's only the radius that moves, the ulna can't. The ulna is always fixed in terms of this position. So again, the stretch would be over supination, same kind of strengthening. Now we have two pronators, the pronator teres, pronator quadratus. We also have a supinator. Okay? Now supinator arises from the lateral epicondyle of the humerus, whereas this was pronator teres was medial aspect, okay? So pronator teres is on the medial aspect of the forearm, whereas supinator is on the lateral aspect. So it arises from the lateral epicondyle of the humerus and the superior crest of the proximal ulna to the proximal 1/3 of the posterior anterior sides of the proximal radius. So we can see it right here, kind of wrapping around onto here, all right? Now, that would make sense that it wraps around from lateral to medial because it supinates, doesn't pronate, all right? So this muscle crosses from the proximal posterior ulna to the proximal posterior lateral radius. Therefore, it has to wrap around in the posterior forearm. So it comes around and goes like this, comes around like this, right? Sorry, comes around like this. I got it backwards. I can't reach around. Kind of comes like that, okay? This causes the head of the radius to laterally rotate and the distal radius to move posterior lateral, so therefore it is a supinator. It has a few fibers that run vertically that are anterior to the elbow, so you could say it flexes, but it's such a weak flexor, I don't even get into it. But because it comes around, you can see it here, right, because it comes around and attaches this way, wrapping around like this, it supinates pulling around. So now we can see here we have pronator teres with its two heads, we have pronator quadratus, both pronators, and then we have supinator here. Now we do have another supinator, don't we? Biceps brachii. Okay, so we have a couple of them that are doing it. The stretch, of course, would be over pronation. Strengthening would kind of be the same. Trigger points in supinator can produce entrapment of the radial nerve as well. They most commonly cause lateral epicondylar pain with some referral to the thenar web. So next class will be bones of the wrist and the hand, and then our wrist joint and the joints in the hand, which are relatively minor, and then the real work begins, which is the flexors and extensors of the wrist, of which there are 14. They're a bit complicated. You probably remember them. Yeah. But I'll try to straighten out.